Today, rate cuts incoming, but be careful what you wish for. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, this is our weekly market update. Well, we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and then to Australia, while covering commodities and crypto on the way. Weird though it seems, a short speech given by an elderly gentleman in a valley and wilderness recreation area in western Wyoming had the markets on edge all week, following the fall and the rise of markets this past few weeks. The mini stroke that roiled global markets over the few weeks is a fading memory, with the market resuming its steady march higher. The S&P 500 is now up 19% for the year, and almost 37% from last November, when the current bull market rally really got going. Of course, we're talking about Fed Chair Jerome Powell and his speech at Jackson Hole as part of the central banker's summer loving on Friday. Just 4 minutes and 50 seconds into his speech, he gave the market what it wanted to hear.
The time has come for policy to adjust. The direction of travel is clear, and the timing and pace of rate cuts will depend on incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. We will do everything we can to support a strong labor market as we make further progress toward price stability. With an appropriate dialing back of policy restraint, there is good reason to think that the economy will get back to 2% inflation while maintaining a strong labor market.
While Powell kept the option open for a 50 basis point move by not tempering his signal with a modifier such as gradual, most economists said short of an unexpected jobs market collapse in August, a quarter point cut is most probable. Addressing inflation, Powell expressed growing confidence that inflation is on a sustainable path back to 2%, while on the employment front, he said it seems unlikely that the labour market will be a source of elevated inflationary pressures anytime soon. And the Fed chair also clarified that the Fed does not seek or welcome further cooling in labour market conditions. However, Powell told listeners that inflation and the labour market data shows an evolving situation. And Powell also discussed the evolving economic landscape, stating that the upside risks to inflation have diminished and the downside risks to employment have increased. No mention, by the way, of where the neutral rate sits. The R star, in my view, is well above 3%, which of course has an impact on how deep cuts will be, perhaps fewer than the markets expect. And by the way, he also gave an alibi for the inflationary pressures, blaming, of course, the rising prices that surprise everybody. But of course, my response to that is yes, but central banks in their loose monetary policy, cutting rates, and government stimulus and support packages through COVID are the root cause sources of the inflationary pressures. So they have no excuse for not seeing it coming, claiming that it was just passing, and then, of course, having to react late. I'm afraid that central banks are part of the problem, not part of the solution. Anyway, in his closing remarks, Powell assured that the Fed would do everything we can to support a strong labor market as we make further progress towards price stability. And as always, the markets heard what they wanted to hear and acted accordingly. The Wall Street indices jumped higher and bond yields fell. At the close in New York, the Dow Jones Industrial Average added 1.14% to hit a new one-month high, while the S&P 500 declined 1.15% and the Nasdaq Composite Index climbed 1.45%. Tesla gained 4.6%, as did Nvidia. Nvidia's highly awaited quarterly results are set to be released after the closing bell next week. After slumping to start August, falling below $100, the shares have now rallied nearly one-third to $129.37. And while the stock is up a modest 5.5% last month, it has risen more than 155% so far this year. Options traders are pricing in a swing of around 10.3% in Nvidia's shares the day after the company earnings are reported. The best performers of the session on the Dow were Home Depot, which rose 2.8%. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs added 2.34%, and Intel was up 2.16%, but remains well down from its $50 at the end of last year. The worst performers for the session were Procter & Gamble, which fell 0.58%, Visa, which declined 0.2%, and Merck & Co., which was up 0.04% to 116.60. The volatility index, the fear index, was down 9.63% to 15.86, and the US dollar index was down 0.82% to 100.68, showing again the weakness of the US dollar. US treasuries were lower, with the 10-year at 3.804 and down 10.59% over the past month, while the 2-year was down to 3.909 and 11.86% down over the past month. Now, there were some key findings of new research which presented at the Jackson Hole, and it called into question the long-touted view that US treasuries were hands down the world's safest haven securities, as the behavior of US treasuries during and after the COVID-19 pandemic suggests they are actually a little different from the debt issued by the likes of Germany, Britain, France, or even big corporations. And they examined a shift in investor behavior in that period, which raises questions about the exorbitant privilege the US government has long enjoyed to borrow broadly on the global market, even as federal budget gaps grow ever wider. The paper drew pushback from the audience, of course, including Treasury Department officials and others, who said it needed to account for uncertainty unleashed around the pandemic, the fact that hundreds of billions of dollars of fiscal response to the crisis were financed without trouble, and that more recently US bond yields have been dropping, even with continued large deficit spending. They would say that, of course, and once again, let me underscore, this was the root cause of the high inflation that we're wrestling with now. Elsewhere, the euro-US dollar was up 0.72% to 1.1193. But while the rate cut signal is now clear, the question is, should markets rally? Well, you may want to reflect on this. In the first 200 days following the first rate cut, equities typically decline by 23% on average. The start of the rate cycle signals the beginning of a deterioration in growth and profits. Money markets continue to predict that US rates will fall by 1% by the end of the year. There's only three meetings left then, September, October, and November. So that assumes that we get at least one 50 basis point cut somewhere along the way. Cuts of that magnitude are typically reserved for emergencies, and emergencies are not great for stocks. Stocks are currently overvalued, with the S&P 500 trading at 21 times expected earnings. That's far above its long-term average of 15.7. But traders are still positioned for perfection, but perfection rarely comes. But what if inflation boils higher and Powell is forced to backtrack on his pivot? Bank of America's Michael Harnett points out that inflationary pressures may be building. Global shipping costs are up fourfold since November 23 due to the conflict in the Middle East. Protectionism is rife. Industrial unrest is becoming more common across the globe, including big strikes that are underway in the North American transport sector. And energy costs keep rising, in part due to the AI boom. And on top of that, governments keep spending, and that won't stop given election cycles around the world. Harnett argues that the US economy desperately needs rate cuts, with inflation-adjusted business rates at 20-year highs for small businesses. But what if it turns out that Powell can't deliver that support because inflation kicks back up? At very least, the volatility will continue in the weeks ahead as economic data, like the significant revisions to employment we had this week, will continue to swing sentiment, plus the election and, of course, geopolitical events. And remember that soft landings are exceedingly rare, occurring in just two of the 12 major US downturns since 1957. Next week, the data-dependent Fed will have a raft of economic indicators to consider ahead of its September rate decision, including the Commerce Department's revised second quarter GDP and its broad-ranging personal consumption expenditures report, which includes the Fed's preferred inflation yardstick, the PCE price index. All of this is perhaps one reason why gold seems attractive to investors as a safe haven, with gold futures for December delivery up 1.19% to $2,548.40 a troy ounce. Elsewhere in commodities trading, crude oil for delivery in October rose 2.57% to $74.97 a barrel, while the October Brent oil contracts rose 2.34% to $79.10 a barrel. According to the United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations, three fires are blazing on a Greek-flagged oil tanker in the Red Sea, one day after rescuers evacuated its crew in the wake of an assault by Yemeni Houthi militants. A potential spill could lead to disastrous consequences for the region's marine environment, the port's authority said. Europe's Stoxx 600 ended near session highs amidst broad gains on Friday as global markets advanced after Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell stated that the time has come to reduce those interest rates. The pan-European Stoxx 600 rose 0.5% to 518.14 at the close. That's the highest level in over 3 weeks and clocked a weekly advance for the third straight week. Rate-sensitive real estate jumped 1.3%, hitting an 18-month high, while utilities, often noted as a bond proxy, gained 1%. Eurozone government bond yields slipped, though, in line with the US counterparts, with the yield, Eurozone government bond yields slipped in line with their US counterparts, with the yield on the German 10-year note, considered as the region's benchmark, last at 2.226%. Most local exchanges clocked gains, actually, with Germany's benchmark touching one-month highs, while the Spanish bourse scaled over two-month highs. The DAX was at 18,640.85, while the CAC 40 in France was at 7,577.04, as negotiations continue to form a French government. A growing number of European Central Bank policymakers are lining up behind another interest rate cut in September, and only major data surprises in the coming weeks would delay that move. In the UK, the FTSE rose 0.48%, despite the announcement of government-regulated energy prices rising by around 10% in the autumn, even as government support is being turned off. Speaking at Jackson Hole, Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey said he thought inflation pressures in Britain's economy was becoming less stubborn than in recent years, but seemed less bullish in terms of future rate cuts, perhaps conscious of inflationary pressures still in the works. Looking at individual names, ALK Albello jumped 12.2%, topping the Stoxx 600, after the Danish allergy solutions maker beat second quarter revenue estimates and raised its full year outlook. UK Melrose Industries, though, declined 7.1% after brokerage UBS double downgraded the aerospace component supplier's rating to sell from buy. And Nestlé closed 0.1% higher after falling by as much as 4% during the day with news of a leadership change. Most Asian stocks fell on Friday as markets gauged hawkish comments from the Bank of Japan and mixed Japanese inflation data ahead of that Jackson Hole speech. Regional markets had taken a weak Thursday lead-in from Wall Street as a rebound in Treasury yields and a sharp sell-down in technology shares had sparked steep overnight losses. That, of course, reversed on Friday. Japan's Nikkei 225 and Topic indices fell about 0.2% each, with both indices set for a ho-hum end of the week as a rebound from early August losses stalled. The Nikkei volatility, which measures the implied volatility of Nikkei 225 options, was down 2.03% to 27.13. The Bank of Japan Governor Yaeda said in a parliamentary hearing that he still saw interest rates at very low and that they needed to increase further to reach a neutral level. He also reiterated plans to raise interest rates further if inflation remained steady. His comments coming after the Bank of Japan hiked rates in an end-of-July meeting. But his comments were somewhat undermined by mixed consumer price index inflation data for July. The reading showed that core and headline CPI inflation rose on improved consumer spending and higher wages. But underlying inflation, which excludes food and energy costs and is a key inflation metric for the Bank of Japan, fell below the bank's 2% annual target. The reading raises some doubts about just how much headroom the Bank of Japan has to keep rising rates. The US dollar, Japanese yen was down to 144.37. Broader Asian markets mostly edged lower and were set for middling weekly performances as a rebound from those early August losses stalled. Technology-heavy indices saw relatively bigger losses, tracking losses in their US peers. South Korea's KOSPI fell 0.5% with SK Hynix at 185,500, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index lost 0.9% on losses in major Chinese internet stocks. Chinese stocks remain close to six-month lows, with the Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices moving in a flat to low range on Friday. The two were also headed for about a 1% decline across the week. India's Nifty 50 moved slightly higher, but is hitting resistance at around the 25,000 level. In Australia, the Australian share market snapped a 10-session winning streak to inch lower in the final session of the week, as traders nervously awaited further clues to the outlook for global interest rates expectations. The S&P/ASX slipped just 3.1 points at the closing bell to end the week at 8,023.9 points. The market's reversal on Friday followed a negative session on Wall Street on Thursday, where the Nasdaq was the worst hit, falling 1.7%. Over the week, the ASX advanced 0.7% as investors cheered stronger than expected results from major listed companies, including software player WiseTech, which finished the week up 28.1% to $40.2 billion worth of valuation. The big miners were lower on fears of slowing iron ore demand from China, with BHP down 0.66% and Rio Tinto down 1.28%. Weaker iron ore prices, of course, are not helping. New Zealand-based healthcare group Fisher & Paykel rallied 11.9% to $32.83 after upgrading its profit guidance. But the worst performer of the day was poultry group Inghams. It shed 20.1% to $3.09 after it warned of slowing volumes. And elsewhere, Accent Group shares lost 15.3% to $2.05 after the footwear retailer missed expectations with its profits reports. Mexican-themed fast food chain Guzman & Gomez rose 3.5% to hit a record high of $34.71 ahead of the company's much-anticipated results next week, which will mark the first earnings report since being listed on the ASX just in June. Banks were in the spotlight as Commonwealth Bank sliced variable interest rates for most new home loan customers in a sign competition in the mortgage market is heating up again. The country's largest lender said on Friday that it cut the variable mortgage rate that it was offering new owner-occupied borrowers by 0.25% to 6.89% if they have a 20% deposit. For those with a bigger deposit, loan pricing will fall by 0.2%. And it also made reductions to variable rates on some investment loans by up to 0.35 of a percentage point. Now remember that the RBA is not expected to cut until 2025, and so we are now seeing reports that savers are being squeezed with some deposit rates lowering. That may have something directly to do with the competition in the mortgage market. Anyway, CBA was up 0.25% to 136.80, while ANZ fell 2.17% to $29.30. And Macquarie rose 0.78% to $211.24. The Aussie was at 67.97 cents against the US dollar and 51.43 cents to the UK pound. Finally, in crypto, exactly 14 years ago, on this day, back in 2010, you could buy 10 bitcoins for a dollar. Today, those same 10 bitcoins will be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, which highlights the meteoric rise in Bitcoin's price, from being worth mere cents to reaching all-time highs of around $74,000 this year. Bitcoin's price growth has been pretty extraordinary. What began as an idea for a decentralized currency has grown into a multi-trillion dollar market, attracting investors, institutions, and governments worldwide. But what is driving that growth, other than hoping, of course, depends on your perspective. Bitcoin, the first and largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization, currently boasts a market capitalization of $1.2 trillion, with a market dominance of 55.7%. And Bitcoin reached a new high of $73,798 in mid-March, boosted by wages on looser US monetary policy and inflows into US exchange-traded funds. But that surge is now eased, as has the pace of ETF inflows. At the time of writing, Bitcoin was up 5.21% in the last 24 hours to 64,399. Join me on Tuesday for my live show with Alan Stokes as we poke the crypto bear, or should it be crypto bull? Global crypto market capitalization currently stands at $2.17 trillion, but appears to be breaking step with gold. So what's ahead? Well, that's what we're going to discuss. And that's a very good question, of course, for the broader markets too. Expect more volatility and uncertainty, period. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.